AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for parenting. Joanna Fortune is with us once again. Afternoon at newstalk.com if you have a question for Joanna. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon, Sean.
First question. Now, I kind of skate through this because it's very, very long. And I would ask people when you're sending in questions, you know, we don't need a novel. Just try and keep to the point. I have two daughters, 9 and 14. My question is about my 14-year-old daughter, whose phone and chore boundaries have become very difficult to manage. The Google Family Link setting turns off her phone at 10 p.m. and back on at 7:20 in the morning, so she's no phone at night. They have rules about it. Phone stays in the kitchen during homework. All family phones should be left in the kitchen at night. Both children must help around the house with chores. However, my daughter, this is the 14-year-old, strongly refuses to put her phone in the kitchen at night and will not hand over her phone at all, leading to daily and nightly arguments. My 9-year-old is becoming distressed by all the fighting. Chores are also a major issue. It's very difficult to get either child to do any chores without a big reward or a big argument. So several questions are already implicit in that. Yeah. So she's needing your help.
Yeah, and I have read the full question that came in. So I think that this is really timely, Sean, because there's a lot of people who are going to consider bringing digital devices into their homes at this time of year. Mm. And I hate to say, and let us use this family as an example. I don't mean it like that. Yes. But also there's something really implicit in all of this and the fuller question around, it's one thing to set those boundaries. And the ones you've listed out there are excellent. But setting a boundary and holding a boundary are two parts of a process. So you can set the most beautiful boundaries and these are the rules and you won't be doing this and that. But if you don't follow through and uphold those boundaries, they're frankly not worth the airtime you gave them or the paper you put them on. Because it's not your 14-year-old's job to go, beautiful, super rules and boundaries, love those, I'm going to go along with that. Developmentally, she's hardwired to see that as an invitation for negotiations to begin, not as something explicit. That's her doing her job. It is your job to hold the boundary. It's her job to test and defy it.
Yeah.
You know, and what's happening in this situation is that an effort has been made to set healthy boundaries. But in the fuller letter, the parent describes how actually they've been slipping for years. And what happens then is that's a gradual erosion. It's not like there's the rule and it's explicitly broken. It's that you've let it gradually slip. And so she's going, well, I hear you, that you want me to put it there, but we all know I don't actually have to, because what are you going to do if I don't? And so I think that's where this is at. So, of course, inconsistent boundaries will breed rows like this and tensions. And paying attention, because I think one of the bits that really jumped out at me was when you said, you know, the 9-year-old is becoming distressed by all the fighting. That's not okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's something to pick up on. I think one of the things, and it's hard because I, you know, she's 14. She's had her phone for approximately 2 years with little boundaries, or at least inconsistent boundaries around use. And so now to establish firm guidelines or boundaries, you have to involve her in agreeing. You can't do this to her now because this is literally the horse is bolted. So you have to involve her in agreeing new rules together, including time limits, restrictions, expectations for use and non-use and areas. There, again, something that jumped out is, you know, when this parent expects children to help around the house with chores, that's quite vague, isn't it? I don't know about you, but children don't. Sure, I will. But they don't know what that means. Mm. You need to say your job is emptying the dishwasher. Like, be that specific.
Yeah.
And nobody is paid, because part of being in a family is helping out. But you might incentivize them with a list of additional chores if you want to earn time, privilege, money, whatever motivates your kids. That's going to be different for different children. Here's an additional list, but there are basics. So be specific about that. I also think that the fact that she strongly refuses to put her phone in the kitchen, even though the Google thing has turned
turning it off. Yeah.
I wonder, is she wary that they might turn it back on and look at her phone without her there? And again, I don't say that to us go, ooh, she must be up to something. She might be up to nothing at all, but she developmentally wants privacy. I wonder if you invited her to put it in a locked box. We're all going to put our phones in this box and the box will be open tomorrow morning. That's it. And, you know, that it is an exercise in trust. So maybe saying to her, we're not going to look at your phone. It's turned off. Ours are off. It's turned off because it's bedtime. We're all going to bed now. And leave it at that. A family sit down is needed here. Name and own the fact that you've messed up. Gave you this phone. We had great rules, but we didn't follow through on them. Mm-hmm. Now we want to keep those great rules because they are great rules. You know, there's nothing wrong with them. But we're going to follow through because we want to do better for you. So you're going to involve both of them in devising a healthy digital device usage plan. She is going to roll her eyes. She's going to meet them with an absolute wave of cynicism and blah, blah, blah. You have to show her that she's not right.
Yeah.
So, and you do that by follow through and action. Because usually, Sean, like we're getting questions around this and a lot of people getting devices listening, please draw up the expectations and agree them. I would literally write them down before you hand the device over. The other thing is, if anyone is considering bringing a device into their home for Christmas, I'm just going to throw this out that I would advise that the device isn't gifted to the child as their device, but is, I'm thinking of gaming, I'm thinking of tablets, but they're family devices. And with phones, if you are bringing phones in, be explicit and painfully explicit about what the terms of use for that phone and what the consequences for misuse of the device is. And 12 is probably a bit young. That's the truth of it, to start it, because it's all consuming for them. So they need help with that regulation because they haven't got it yet. You know, that kind of thrill-seeking, reward-oriented part of the brain that's developing so quickly is cueing her to go, more of it, stay on it, do more, do more. So she needs you to have stepped in. You're saying and owning the fact that, well, we intended to, but it didn't quite happen. Now is the time to do it, but you have to bring her with you because otherwise nothing will change.
But this will be kicking and screaming.
Absolutely,
though, really.
It will.
Yeah.
But sometimes you have to do that. You know, like Sean, sometimes you have to embrace the fact that this is not going to be popular and you're not going to be popular and you can withstand it if you are a united front together on it. And there's going to be a line of, hey, you cannot speak to me like that. That's not allowed. We're going to pause the conversation because everyone's feelings are getting too big. We're going to take distance from it and we'll talk about it again. But I'm not moving. This is going to happen. And you have to show her through demonstration, I mean what I say.
Yeah.
Because she has learned that you might not.
And plus, a phone's an addictive device.
All of us know that. You set those wellness devices to cut you off your social media and then you go, skip, allow everything today. And we all do it. And anyone who's checked their wellness usage knows that you think you've been on 20 minutes and it's been 2.5 hours. So as adults, we struggle with that. A 14-year-old will absolutely struggle with it.
Yeah, yeah. I have 3 children aged 5, 3, and 9 months. I'm looking for some advice on how to improve their relationship with their grandparents. My 5-year-old in particular has always been standoffish with his grandparents, but both my in-laws and my mum were all big effort to make involved in his life. We initially put this down to COVID, as he was born in 2020 and wasn't really ever minded by anyone else as a baby. He tends to be on the shy side. The attention of being the adored first grandchild in my in-laws is quite pressurising for him. His younger brother is more outgoing. Until recently, he loved his grandparents, but lately he wants to emulate his older brother and is following his lead. Both of them are now saying they hate their grandparents, even to them in person, and there doesn't seem to be anything we can do to stop this. My mother-in-law has recently offered to help with the school run for my eldest, who's in junior infants, and this would be a huge help to me, as I'm finding it harder to manage it with the baby's naps. My son says he doesn't want to go with his granny, and it's hard enough to get him out to school in the morning as it is. We tried one morning last week. He ran away from her and walked in the middle of the road, ignoring her. So she's afraid to walk with him again. We want to try her collecting him from school in the car, but she's even offered to take him for ice cream afterwards. He's still refusing. I'll be going back to work in the new year. I could really use the help that's been offered. We have a good relationship with our families and see them regularly. Any advice would be appreciated.
Yeah, there's 2 bits. This is another long letter, but there's 2 bits that really jump out in here, and it's actually not about the grandparents, if I'm honest. It's that line, it's hard enough to get him out to school in the morning as it is.
Yeah.
And it's that bit, I'll be going back to work in the new year. And I can't help wondering, Sean, if this one is more about it not being parents rather than it being the grandparents.
Mm.
So are these children, especially your five-year-old, saying, no, I don't like my grandparents, when really what they're saying is, I don't like being away from you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a complex, nuanced little thing to express. And it's easier to go, I hate them.
Yeah.
They're succinct. Yeah. You've gotten my message. But really, it's I hate being away from you. And he can't articulate, and I wouldn't expect him at five otherwise, especially there's a 9-month-old here. And so there's been a new baby. Mom has been home for this period of time with the new baby. Now things are changing. And you've a little guy saying, who's five, maybe went into primary school in September as well, who's saying, do you know what? No, I'm digging my heels in.
Yeah, this
and I'm
is
not
too
doing
much.
It. It's too much. It might be worth leaving the baby with the grandparents for a little bit and having one-to-one time with each of the boys. The five-year-old. Three-year-old does sound like he's mirroring or they're mirroring the older one. But especially the eldest one, do some one-to-one time, top up the little love cup there and just reassurance and lots of it. But there also does need to be, we're back talking about boundaries today, that he's not allowed to speak to grandparents like that. So he's five. So cause and effect thinking is there, but it's still immature and underdeveloped. Okay. So he'll say something in the heat of the moment impulsively, but afterwards you can do a little reflection with him when things are calm and just say, do you know, those words aren't okay to say to granny or granddad. They love you so much. And if it's about that you don't want to be there, you can say, oh, I don't want to be there. I want to be at home. Tell him phrases, short ones, that he can say, but reminding him that that's not an okay thing to say. It doesn't mean he won't say it again.
Yeah.
But you're going to keep holding that line and repeating it. I think this one is more about a wave of change that has come into this little guy's life in the last 9 months. And now there's more change coming with mum going back to work. And he's seeing grandparents as, you're the reason she can go back to work because you're taking us. And if you don't take us, then she'll have to stay at home. I really feel for granny, by the way, the child who ran into the middle of the road.
I really feel for mom as well.
Oh, massively.
Yeah, because this is like nothing but guilt now.
But you know, if you're minding someone's child and they run into the road, like you live in fear that something's going to happen on your watch. So I mean, the fact that granny is coming back on, I'll do it and bring you for ice cream. Like you've an amazing support system around you with these grandparents. So of course you want to protect that. And this is a lot, isn't it? Going back to work after maternity leave is so difficult. And three young children here, 5, 3 and 9, they're all very young. So yeah, I think more one-to-one time, give baby to grandparents, divide and conquer, one-to-one with each of the boys, particularly the five-year-old, and name what he can't name. There's been a lot of change. You had me at home. I'm going back to work. That's really hard. You'd probably rather stay at home with me. I'm guessing that. And you don't want to go to granny's, but you're this, and then explaining. A lot of kind of acknowledging it doesn't mean, therefore, I'm going to change everything.
Yeah.
But you're just letting him know, I get it. You don't have to fight so hard to make sure I get it. I do get it. And helping him express something in another way.
Yeah. God love you. That's another hard sell.
It's tough, isn't it? Yeah.
We've twin boys. They're six. They absolutely love Christmas and have been firmly in the Christmas spirit since the start of November. We're not a religious family, so for us, Christmas is a secular family affair. Last year, my parents-in-law, who are fairly religious, looked after them on some of the weekends running up to Christmas as we try to get shopping and other things done before the day itself. Unbeknownst to us, they took the boys to Mass on a couple of those Sundays. We found this out because the boys are very excited about the idea of the Advent candles and a new one being lit each week before Christmas, and spoke at length about it. This was all fairly harmless, but it did mean that we had to emphasise to my in-laws that we don't want to bring them up in any religion. We were hoping that they would that would be the end of it, but unfortunately, the boys have been at us in the past week or so to see the candles being lit again. They go to a non-denominational school, so it doesn't really get taught at school. But I guess one of their classmates must have mentioned it or something. I really don't want to have to explain the merits or otherwise of religion and the historical basis of Christmas to a couple of six-year-olds. I just want them to enjoy it and they can make their own choices later in life. Do I have to address all this now, or what age should we be talking to them about this as a non-religious family?
Ah, I think it's relatable, isn't it, to a lot of people. I'm not clear, though, Sean, when you're reading that, if it's a candle countdown or religion that has captured them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it may be just the candles.
I think
and
it's
they're
the
thinking
candles.
Maybe one thing's going to lead to another.
Yeah,
and
but I don't hear the boys going, and therefore I'd love to go to Mass, and I love the stories, and the songs. Like, there's none of that. It's the candles. And they're also not saying in this letter, you know, while it's a secular time of year, do they use Advent calendars themselves at home? Because Advent calendars, whatever way you want to use them, or different types of them, they can serve as a useful countdown mechanism for kids. Like, the hype for Christmas is unbelievable. And trees have been up for weeks and weeks now. So it's a very long build up. So kids are quite high on it. And now we're going, okay, we're nearly there. We really are, everyone. We're nearly there now. But the countdown can be, okay, it's day one, day two, and it can structure them. The candles he's mentioning are similar to that. There's only four or five of them, you know, because you get the 4 weeks and then the candle on the day itself. And so it's like, oh, it's not 25. It's, you know, and it's exciting. So I'm just wondering, if you're not using Advent calendars, you could do your own. Like, it doesn't even have to be a pop the door thing. You can make your own little calendar system. It's not too late, even now on the 3rd of December, you know, that you can structure a weekly activity that you focus on every week. You know, we're going to do this week. That, you know, we're going to write some cards, or we're going to draw pictures for people. We're going to wrap up some gifts. We're going to maybe make some cookies and drop them to the neighbors, whatever, you know, different activities every week that you can do. And I do think, Sean, it's worth mentioning as well that boundaries around religious practice are a twofold process. And what I mean by that is, you don't practice, and that must be respected. You're not raising your children religious, and I fully agree that must be respected. But your in-laws do practice, and that also must be respected. So if you're leaving your children with them of a weekend, and that's a Saturday and Saturday overnight, and you know they go to Mass on a Sunday, what is it you expect them to do? Is one of them not to go to Mass so they stay home with your children? Or is it that you say, we know you go to Mass, you know we don't, we'll collect the children at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
We'll take them and you go off to Mass. Do you know what I mean? Like, so when you say, don't take my children to Mass, but please mind them on the day you go to Mass. I kind of feel like maybe you need to re-examine the structure of that arrangement. I think if you know your in-laws go to Mass, they go to Mass. Okay, so support that and work around that and pick the kids up early, or I don't know, different times of Masses. That can be worked out, but it might need to be acknowledged.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of a comparison, but, you know, they might have in-laws who go to GAA matches on a Sunday morning, or and I'm not trying to kind of demean going to Mass by making that comparison, or go horse racing.
Have a ritual or a practice that they engage in.
Yeah, and so, you know, you mightn't be keen on seeing the kids seeing gambling at horse, you know, at racing courses or something. Is it going to do them that much harm? They're not going to come.
I mean, no, but I think if you've decided I don't want them exposed to a particular religious ethos, or any religious ethos, and I've gone so far as non-denominational schools, and this is a stated practice in our home, then yes, you're allowed to say, please don't do that. But I also think it's a shared responsibility in ensuring that it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Having in-laws that are taking your kids for a few weekends in December, you're really lucky.
Yeah, you don't want to sniff at that. I think we'll just skip to the last question, because that's the only short one we have today. Every year we find it increasingly difficult to keep the kids calm as Christmas approaches. They tend to get so excited that it leads to outsized expectations, arguments and disappointment. My husband insists on getting Advent calendars for them all, and I actually find this increases the problem.
Okay.
I get so fed up with listening to the constant Christmas songs being sung around the house and the incessant materialism of this month every year. I would love to introduce a much calmer approach to Christmas, where we can get the children to see it in a different way, as an opportunity to think about other people and to give things away rather than receive. As you can imagine, I'm up against it with these ideas, but how can I change their ways without coming across as the Grinch?
Now look, you can. And you won't be grinchy. But I don't think this parent loves Christmas. And I think that's okay too. But you married or got together with somebody who does love it. Okay?
Yeah.
And you've got children and they innately love it. So part of this is pick your battles. And I'm not sure this is one. It can be both, is the point though, Sean. Your Advent can be that they donate a toy. It depends on how many toys you need rid of. And if they're only giving you little tiny figures, you're going to have to do it every day.
Yeah.
But they pick a toy from their collection every week each, and that goes in a donate box, making sure it's good quality and all the parts are there and working.
That's a great idea, actually.
And you're doing a clear out with the idea of creating space for the influx coming in, but you're getting them into that giving mode. You can have them write cards for local retirement homes, elder person homes, bring them down. You can have them make some little crispy cakes, you know, anything, small buns, bring them and they go and they say hello to people and drop them in. So they're aware of others. You can bring them to, I don't know how old they are, to the supermarket and put together a little donation shopping bag of toiletries and tinned goods for people who are in transient accommodation or are experiencing homelessness. And you're teaching them we are giving to others. Of course, it can be that. You can also do a family game night. I would encourage that. I think it also helps with the hype going on to promote connection. So it's not just about gimme, gimme, gimme commercialization, but there's connection, there's giving, there's thoughtfulness to others. And they can have their advent calendars in the morning with their dad and open it and see what's inside. Of course, you can have both. So I think you can bring some of your ideas in, and it doesn't have to be the end of the way they're currently doing it. It's more a blend.
Yeah.
But I'd also say to this parent, mind yourself with the overwhelm of Christmas, because it's not for everyone.
No, and it is. Yep. I mean, really, she's got a fair point there. Like, you can't avoid it.
Absolutely agree. And it is so long. It's Halloween is hyped. You know, I do my best at home to try and keep November as a nothing month. You know?
Good luck with that.
Decorations, nothing at all. I have nothing up happening this week only. And I love Christmas, by the way. I love it. But I just don't need 8 weeks of it.
Yeah. Because then you hate it.
Exactly. You're sick of it. And I want to enjoy it, but I also want it to be manageable.
Yeah, indeed. Great advice as ever, Joanna. Thanks a million.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.